So this morning, I decided I'm a bit behind in my correspondence, so I decided to come in early before the morning puja to do my emails. So get up early, come to the door of the office, no key. No key. So, and we don't hide a key under the under wherever one hides a key. So the first feeling is disappointment, right? And the second feeling is blah, 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 blah. And so then I made a decision not to suffer, but my mind wanted to suffer. It's perverse, isn't it? Right, already there's the disappointment. No, I have to make more out of it and get into no, I'm not going to do that. So I went to the heart, and then the disappointment came up again, and the energy went to the head. No, back to the heart, back to the heart, and it died away. You know, it was only a minute or so, but then I had a nice walk back to my kuti, and I didn't do my emails, which is actually nice too. But it's very, very much the way of how our minds are, as Ajahn Sucitta was saying in a talk we listened to the other night, patterned into sometimes wholesome things, but also patterned into suffering, and those patterns of disappointment leading to annoyance or to anger or to rage. Depending on the depth of the disappointment, they're just like this whole structure which you have to be very, very careful of, right? And I'm talking to Alicia, just talking about the analogy of poison ivy. You know, when something like a pattern like that gets triggered, be it a fearful pattern of something that might happen, or an averse happen about disappointment or something like that. It's very much like this is a skin rash now. Don't scratch. And you know poison ivy. Anyone's had poison ivy. Everything in you is saying, if you scratch, you will be really happy. And you are. And that's the problem with poison ivy. It feels absolutely fab. You know, you had poison ivy and you're in the shower. And it's one of the most pleasurable things I've ever experienced. For 60 seconds. And then it itches even more intensely. And that is a very good analogy how something like you feel disappointed by someone, and then I don't want this disappointment, so what I do, I hate someone. And that way I kind of get rid of the disappointment, but I don't. I just reinforce another mode of suffering. And these are very patterned in the mind for all of us in different ways and different things. And there, if you're really on the practice of knowing the mood of the mind, and you really just stay with it, you're very, very diligent, then you do two things. First of all, you don't make the rash worse. And secondly, the disease begins to die away. And that's very much the pattern around the Four Noble Truths, is that craving has to be abandoned. And the trouble with craving is that it is pleasurable. It's not displeasurable. You know, it's not like totally bad or totally wrong. So if you think like with poison ivy, any rash that you have, any kind of emotional rash or pattern that you have, what do you need to do to not scratch it? Not the idea that you don't have rashes which arise in your heart. That idea would be nice. You know, it'd be nice if I never felt disappointment. I was some kind of super cool monk, right? My leg gets cut off. Oh well, it's just a leg, it's not self. You know, I can get a plastic one. No problem. Totally equanimous. Sorry, life isn't that way. Life is this way. You know, life presents itself this way. So the idealized practitioner has some ideal of, you know, how my emotional experience should be. But then the reality is always what presents itself. And the challenge is not to deny reality or dismiss reality, is actually to accept it, but not get victimized by it. So the more one practices just knowing the mood of the mind, and you just get really, really good at that. And body awareness, you get really, really good at that. So that when things like forgetting your key, or even worse, something more difficult, like let's say if you get some kind of disappointment where you're blindsided by life, like if someone in a marriage, someone cheats on someone else and they don't realize it and they discover it. I mean, that's shattering. That's very, very difficult, because you get blindsided by the disappointment. Then your whole psyche falls apart. You know, go into rage or all manner of difficult things. And then, you know, it takes a long time to heal from that. Those are very, very difficult things to heal from. And so there's a lot of work that just needs to be done to reestablish the psyche in some kind of confident form. Those are very difficult things. Or a sudden death in the family, or some huge loss which you're not expecting. It's very difficult, because our psyches are sort of, they kind of have a structure of kind of knowing what the world is about. And when all of a sudden that world is altered in a way you did not expect, very difficult, very difficult. And then that's the extreme where you get all manner of things, and then just the minor things like not having a key. But they're all important. They're all important, because they all develop the capacity to be mindful. So if you keep just making each moment important, and keep the reflective mind operating around the way things are, then the insights come, and you have this what we mean by barami. This is a sense of character which can deal with life's ups and downs, big things or small things. How do you, how do you deal with a skin rash? How do you deal with itching? You don't scratch it. As simple as that. You just don't scratch it. So you have to see what is the itching and scratching. If it's around a person, maybe like you look how memory works. If you have some disappointment with a person, then how does memory work in a negative way? Memory works in a way that each time the memory of the person is triggered, which is the memory that's triggered? It's that disappointment, right? So I get, Siri told me that he is a friend in Thailand. You've heard this story before, it was a good story. He was a tailor in Ubon when the American Army was, Air Force was in Ubon bombing Vietnam in Thailand. And so he had really good work with the American soldiers making fancy Thai clothing for them. And then the air base was closed down. He didn't have work. He went down to Bangkok, and he had a friend who was a gem trader. So he got into the gem trading business, and he did very well. And this friend was a really good friend. He was a kind of mentor to him in that trade. And Siri got quite successful. And then the mentor came to him one day and said that he had a very difficult cash shortage, and asked Siri if Siri would lend him several million baht, or quite a lot of money. And Siri, totally out of trust, emptied his bank account and gave it to the mentor without any signed agreement. The mentor went to America and was never seen again. So I saw Siri a year later, and I asked him, "Are you still angry?" And he said he was angry for about a year, and then he finally said, well, maybe it's my karma. I owe him a million from a last lifetime," and he let it go. So he used the ideas of karma, but for a year, his mind was just in hell dealing with this kind of thing. So in terms of memory, notice how if you make a mistake yourself, which you perceive as a mistake, oftentimes it's not even a mistake, right? But you perceive it as some kind of mistake in action or speech or whatever, and then you remember that, you keep going back to that incident and your perception of that incident. They did that to me, 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 they did that to me. And even if it's true, the reinforcement of that makes it a very powerful channel in the mind. So each time the memory comes, it goes down that channel. And each time you pick up that channel, there's that whole patterning of anger, and it's not right, blah, 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 right? And you're trapped. You're just a victim of this kind of habit. And one could see that if one is unskillful or inadvertent or not understanding of a particular pattern, it might be ingrained in there for quite a few years. And then suddenly you start to meditate with it and you see, wow, look at that. Look how powerful that is. And then you have to just be quite sober about it. Okay, this is a powerful pattern, but I'm going to work at it. Rather than expecting, okay, now that I've noticed it, that's it, it's finished, now I can have a cup of tea. And it's not that easy, because the power of karma, the energy of these forces, is disappointing. They can be really, really, really strong and keep coming up again and again and again. So you have a lot of perseverance and just have faith that awareness of the mood of the mind is this way. Keep coming back to that. Then you're both purifying and you're not indulging. You can put alternative ideas in, forgiveness in this case or whatever, or go to the heart. I like to go to the heart. So if I have a pattern which I know is a pattern of suffering, I know for me it's up in the head. It just starts going into thoughts, and I just keep going back to here, back to here, back to here, in a kind of receptive way. And then I can process it. But that works for me. I don't know if it works for you. But the point is to see how, in this we call the teachings on dependent origination. This, with this as condition, there is that. With the arising of this, there's a arising of that. Right? You see conditionality going on. It's not a self. You know, put the key in the door. What key? It's not there. Haven't got a key. Disappointment. With no key as condition, there's disappointment. Right? So where's the suffering? Right? It's what I do with it afterwards. And the feeling of disappointment is unpleasant. My desire mind wants the key because I got work to do, blah, 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 blah. And I get up early. Blah, blah, blah. And the desire mind then doesn't want that result. So rather than accepting the result, the desire mind gets angry, trying to get rid of that result. And it doesn't work, obviously. So you take the result. Oh, disappointment feels this way. You're right to the dukkha. You become aware of the dukkha, and that's unpleasant. It's not a nice experience. But as you stay with it, it is just an experience. You stay with the awareness, and then the disappointment ceases, and you're free. Or you don't have enough mindfulness, and the disappointment's much stronger than that. You know, someone like you, some really unfortunate thing happens at work or in the family, and the disappointment's more powerful, and it affects you more powerfully, and you hang on to it kind of more powerfully. Okay, then there's more work to do. Same work, more work to do. Nisanka. Nisanka. Good morning. There you go. I thought you were going to hit the carpet on me. You got the idea, yeah. So, I mean, we all understand this. It's just a kind of reminder. But look at patterning. Look at patterning like in our relationships. Sometimes relationships become habits. You know, sometimes I hear people the way they talk with each other, and I can say, this is the habit. There's no real empathy there. It's just one reacting to another, one reacting to another. No real presence. It's just like habits. So the idea of empathy in Buddhist practice is the idea of really like plugging into where life is, where another person is, or where you're at. And empathy is a way of considering metta bhavana. You know, when you're empathetic, you're receptive to life, whether it's joyous or confused or suffering. You take it on board with a kind of openness. So the good, like a good imagery is like when a child presents to you some little drawing a child's done in kindergarten, and you know you don't criticize it and say, oh, I don't know, those lines aren't straight. you're kind of joyous that the kids created something, and in the innocence, and you have a mudita for their happiness, right? As opposed to something like jealousy. So someone says, "Well, I'm going to Tahiti for Christmas." You say, "Oh, good on you. I have to be here for the winter." That's a lack of empathy. It's just selfish, isn't it? It's about me. Life is about me, and that's a rather miserable way to operate. So the opening of the heart to other people is also the opening of the heart in general. Anything I do skillfully, so this is skillful patterning, right? So if I'm skillful patterning, but anything I do skillfully becomes a skill for all, always, doesn't it? So if I can relate to a child with empathy and see the joy of their creation, the joy of their goodness, then I can feel that. I said, well, that's actually much nicer than jealousy. And I think I'd rather hang out there than in jealousy. So then when jealousy comes up, or envy, or sour grapes kind of feeling, you say, ah, that's different, that's different. And you can begin to try to choose ways of functioning which are more uplifting and joyous. And that's empathy. Or compassion, like compassion is a form of empathy. When I see someone who's cold, then I want to give them a blanket, right? Rather than say, oh, just suffer. Endure. I don't know about you, I want to just make them comfortable and happy. Maybe I'm not tough enough, Ajahn. Turn off the heating and so on. So compassion is a going out, isn't it? It's like, oh, you're suffering. What can we do to alleviate your suffering? Whereas cruelty is like, it's the language of like cutting into someone, isn't it? Like you see someone's having a happy time and you give them a little jab and say, to try to bring them down. That's cruelty. That's another way. So like cynicism can be very cruel, or humor can be very cruel. I don't know, men seem to love to kind of insult each other as a way of showing affection. It's a very curious cultural kind of a thing. You look like a real turkey today. Yeah, you look like this loving relationships in Western culture. Curious. So the more we can practice empathy, so then like empathy for disappointment, what is that? It's like, disappointment feels this way. It's like bringing it up into consciousness and feeling it, and then it resolves itself quite normally. Okay, let's do some sitting.